Welcome to the Minivade Gang Podcast, episode 97. This is Steve Borsch.
Are you okay, Steve?
On with Tim, Mr. Smooth Elliott.
You've got the blues down here in Lakeville.
Graham, my hair thickens.
My what?
And Phil, I have a daughter, Will Son. I know, that was bad.
Gosh. That was really bad.
That was bad.
Yeah, that was bad.
But hey,
I had to think of something.
This morning, you're crazy.
So how you guys doing?
Good.
We're excellent. Great.
Good.
Looking for 83 temperature today or 80 or something. So,
oh, man.
Wearing shorts.
Yeah, no kidding. It's gorgeous out there, the leaves. Oh, man.
It is.
Well, so
we gotta hurry because I think I got a guy coming with a chainsaw to cut down some trees. So,
good.
If that happens, you'll forgive me if I duck out because I don't want to subject anybody else to that.
All right. Well, so as long as you just said that, Phil, jump in and tell us about this MHTA event that happened this week.
Yeah, I was happy to moderate a panel yesterday for social media and the enterprise. And then there was Albert Marucci at the same time moderated a panel in social media and marketing and PR. I know that's the subjects have never been covered before, but
never.
we had a nice crowd of folks, MHTA members and such, join us over at Best Buy. And I think we had a very productive 90-minute session. I felt sorry because the Techni guys, or excuse me, the Minnesota High Tech Association folks had problems with their video presentation at the beginning. And so, you know, there's this extra added pressure when you're a tech organization to have everything run smoothly. And of course, you know, Murphy's Law forbids that. So
I heard there was a separate enterprise session or something that occurred concurrently?
Yeah, I did the enterprise session. I moderated a panel with Nancy Lyons, and we had Ernest Grumbles on the panel as well, and Jason Parker from Best Buy, who works in their social media area, and then happy to say Rick Munn joined us as well. So
great.
We tried to cover off on what we can do. The less glamorous side, I guess, of social media is how to build employee collaboration and productivity and that sort of a thing, and keeping it legal with Ernest. So we had I think really good session, good 90 minutes on both. Heard great reviews about the marketing session as well. So.
Did they talk about the 12th force in any detail?
You know, we touched on the 12th force, but it was probably more of a concept of involving your employees and your business in collaborating and doing better things for your company. So, but yeah, 12th Force, of course, has to be brought up as a success story.
Did they talk about how that's doing?
Yeah, you know, from what I can tell, it's doing quite fine. They all have little badges now, so little pins that say they're
really?
On the 12th Force.
Oh.
So, seems to be doing okay.
Huh. Are they going to get cars?
I don't know if they're going to get cars because it's really all about Twitter, you know. So unless you need a car to get around Twitter next.
That's right.
You
never know.
You know, there is a new CEO there, so that could happen, I suppose.
Yep. Well, Graham, you also heard about something going on with our pals at Internet Broadcasting.
Yeah, there was a release that went out, I guess, earlier in the week that they've announced they will adopt a new content management system from, I guess, a European company called Core Media. And as a result, what I hear is they've lopped off a bunch of developers that were supporting their own proprietary content management system. So the word I heard is they laid off something less than 5% of the employees.
Yep, and
which my guess would be maybe around 15, something like that.
Yeah,
I haven't had that confirmed.
Well, for those that don't know Internet Broadcasting, that are listening. It was started by George Johnson and Reed Johnson, no relation. They were college buddies, guys that I know well, to do TV website delivery. And they are in 75, they're doing 75 or so sites, and they ended up doing the content feed for the Olympics. In fact, I was at Vignette and talked to Reed about Vignette's content management software at the time, and, you know, would there be a possibility to do something with that, and it ended up not. It was being driven out of New York, and it didn't happen. But they had rolled their own CMS, and had written it from scratch. And which always kind of amazed me that they would put forth that kind of effort and energy to have their own system when you could clearly choose one that was.
But that was in the pre-Web 2.0 days when
a CMS
was, you know, millions of dollars.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
So it actually cost less to build your own.
Yeah, Steve was getting commissions on those million-dollar deals.
Yeah. And in some cases, multiple millions, but we won't go there.
I was going to say that CMS that they developed themselves, I came to sort of gather, was being held together with baling wire, too.
I think so.
By the way, in the announcement, which will be in the show notes, I noted that an interim CEO was being quoted from Hearst, which is one of the media groups that owns or holds equity in internet broadcasting. So they have put an interim CEO in there, which I didn't realize. I knew they were searching for a new CEO, but... So that guy maybe had something to do with this decision, I would assume. He directed it, you know, so.
Well, and this might also help him compete. It would be interesting to find out more. It might help him compete with some of the, corporate-developed offerings, like Viacom for CBS. Mm-hmm. It's probably going to help them in some ways.
Are they updating their model, because everything seems to be going to apps these days, as opposed to just having a web presence?
But that's a good question. That's the $64 question. They don't talk much. You know, you don't find out much about what's going on over there until they put out a release.
Right.
Yeah, because the first Google TV device from Logitech came out this week, and it appears that. You know, there's going to be these multiple app stores and multiple devices that allow consumers anyway to view content. And so that's where the action is. It's not actually, on the web anymore.
You know, that's a really good point, because one of the things that I loved about Boxy and starting to use Boxy or using Plex app or really any XBMC, any of these media centers, was that they had apps that were in effect channels. So Funny or Die had a channel, Mevio had a channel, the White House had a channel, on and on. You know, CNN had their own channel, and it was an app that you would load and then with a slightly different interface. And so I wonder where this is going to head. It's good.
We just got a Roku box recently, and they also have, a number of channels. But what's interesting there is that, it's fairly easy and trivial for anybody to develop their own private channels.
Yes.
So you can pretty much roll your own content, which is kind of interesting, and then view it on your TV. So, there's that, and those things have come way down in price. They're well under $100 now, or right at $100 if you get their top of the line. And then, of course, Apple TV is right there at $100 with their thing. Google TV, all of these things... stream Netflix and a number of other channels. And so I get to see in a year or so, you're going to have hundreds of channels, just like you have, apps on your iPhone. You're going to have hundreds of apps on your Apple TV.
Well, actually points out the huge opportunity that exists for all of us, for every organization here, for every developer, to have their own channel.
Yeah. So if I were running internet broadcasting or involved over there, that would be where I would be investing my money. It wouldn't be in a CMS. It would be in how can I support Google TV and Apple TV and Roku and all these other ways of delivering content to television screens. And because that's clearly where all this is headed. And by the way, you need to also think about mobile too. So you've got your iPhone, your Android, and iPad, and what is coming with all these Android tablets as well.
So you're saying that my postcard strategy isn't going to work anymore?
No, I don't think so.
Damn.
It was good back in the day, though.
All right. I don't know. I'd still support you on that, Steve. So go ahead, send me some mail.
Okay. Thank you, Phil.
I was going to say Amazon announced a new initiative and a new app store coming that hit the news recently here in the last 12 hours or so. So everybody's getting into the App Store game, that's for sure. And wow. There's talk that Apple could have an App Store just for Apple TV, perhaps. But I agree with the Business Insider story I saw this morning, and I think Apple TV's won the first round over Google TV because you know what? A $99 price point is going to be a lot more palatable to consumers than that initial $300 price point with that Logitech thing.
Yeah, what I found interesting about that is that it still requires either set-top box for a cable connection or a satellite. So it's not like you can use this with over-the-air.
Right. You mean Apple TV?
No, the Google TV.
Google, Logitech,
So it's this overlay on top of an already existing set-top box. So you're adding yet another set-top box on top of another one. You're not replacing it. It's not like you can stick a cable card in there and get it to work with your cable. So I think a lot of people are going to say, I don't want to mess around with this IR blaster stuff. And I don't see a lot of people out there saying, I want to pay more for my TV. People are saying they want to pay less for their TV.
Right. It's too geeky too. You know, I mean, this initial round, it's just too geeky, you know?
Well, remember back web TV days, the experience of having a web browser on your TV was terrible. Of course, it was standard definition. It would probably be better today with high definition. But I'm not sure if I want a web browser on my TV.
What? You don't want a web browser on your TV? Why not?
I don't see where it adds a lot of value. I mean, what would be, you know, I can just pick up my phone and you know, talk into it or do a quick search and I can get information that I want right there. Why do I want to do it on my TV?
Well, wouldn't you rather do that than have yet another device sitting next to you?
No, I have a handheld device that I'm able to do all the kind of searching that I want. So I don't see why I would want to do that on TV. I do see value in searching content libraries. We also recently got a TiVo Premiere, which is one of their new versions of TiVo that's HD, and it has a unified interface where it searches through your Netflix and Blockbuster and Amazon and whatever you get for TV. And I see a value there that's probably what most of the value of Google TV is.
Steve, do you use the browser on your TV?
Well, no. And
it's strictly access to video feeds.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, so when I started off with the Mac Mini, I bought this big keyboard, Logitech keyboard that had a trackpad in it. So it's run by Bluetooth and I could access all sorts of stuff and I could access the browser, but then I had to use Apple's, I forget what it's called for people that, you know, have seeing problems and so forth, Universal Access it's called. And so I could zoom in. I could use a keyboard combination to zoom in because I'd be looking at titles in iTunes, for example, and I couldn't see the things from, you know, 15 feet away. And my kids could run it and I could run it. And my wife looked at me and said, all I want is something sitting there with a remote control. So when I use Netflix, I don't want to pull up a browser and I don't want to zoom in and I don't want to use the trackpad to zoom around. I just want to click and watch it. So I bought the Roku box and used that primarily for Netflix access, but some Revision 3 stuff and some other tech shows. But here's the punchline. It just didn't do enough. We couldn't do YouTube. We couldn't do all these other things that we wanted to watch. And that's when we bought the Apple TV. It ends up doing just about everything we want right now, except it doesn't do what you said, Tim, which is it doesn't have access to all those apps.
Well, you can hack it. I mean, there have been jailbreaks and people are running apps on them now. But you want that Apple experience. So I'd be shocked if, you know, after the first of the year, you don't see that kind of thing starting to open up.
Right. Another app store, baby.
There we go.
Absolutely. I mean, it makes total sense. That thing is a 8 gigabyte iPod Touch, basically, that hooks to your TV set.
Right. Mm-hmm. With the digital
audio.
Can
you imagine how many apps you could put into 8 gigabytes? I mean, they need some of that for buffering, but even if it's just half of that available for apps, you've got hundreds and hundreds of apps you could put in there.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm sorry. I have this hard. We talk so much about apps that I have, for some reason, and I know this is going to date me a little bit, but I just keep having this vision of Emily Latella, you know, the character from Saturday Night Live, going through my, what's all this talk about naps?
All right. I take naps when I watch TV.
For that. Oh.
All right. Hey, that's actually a good segue. No, it's not. Anyway,
that's not a good segue to
into
anything.
Into Verizon. Verizon announced that they're bringing 4G wireless to the Twin Cities, and they'll probably go out in Lakeville first because you guys get everything.
Well,
before the rest
of us. I got two words on that.
Yeah.
About time. I think it was last summer that I went to the demo of the 4G from Verizon up in St. Louis Park. It's like, oh my God, they were talking about June back then. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, but glad they're bringing it in. They're using the LTE platform, right?
Yeah, they are. And what are the speeds on that? Do you guys know?
No, I don't. I'm sorry.
Okay. Tim, do you know?
I have no idea. But what's interesting is they're sort of the last carrier to, AT&T would be the last carrier to actually light up this area. Because T-Mobile this summer already did with their HSPA network. And ironically, only now can you get phones that tap into it with the G2 and a few others they've recently announced. But they have fast speed next generation network.
Well, I just pulled up,
of course, has been here for a while.
Yeah, right. You know? Well, I just pulled up something in just a 2-second search here that LTE speeds are faster than expected in Verizon trials. So they did these trials in Boston and Seattle that have shown downlink average rates of 5 to 12 megabits per second and of 2 to 5 megabits per second, which will give mobile customers browsing speeds comparable to a typical wired home internet experience. That's incredible.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I hate to bring up the point of caps, but that's going to be a problem. Because
yeah, it is.
It is.
You know, we're seeing tiers coming in because now these are usable for regular home applications.
Right.
Right. So I think that's going to be where the major issue is going to be from a consumer standpoint. I mean, 5 gigs a month is not going to, and that's, I think, one of the higher caps. That's not going to cut it.
And they're just not, well, with all these devices, too, if there really truly are 32 Google OS or Android tablets shipping this fall and, you know, other smartphones and yada, 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 there's no way that these networks are going to be able to keep up with that kind of access. Especially if people are streaming video.
Well, good thing there's multiple networks, huh?
Yeah, no kidding. Well, listen, we should bring in our Startup Spotlight guest for this week.
Founders of kidblog.org, is that right, Graham?
Kidblog.org.
Yes, one of the two co-founders, Dan Fleece, is going to be joining us. This is a pretty exciting little startup that's been getting a lot of attention lately and started kind of as just a passion, a sideline, and has quickly gotten a lot of following. So Dan can tell us more about that and how he came to team up with his co-founder, Matt Hardy.
Great. Well, let's bring him in. I'm calling him now.
Hello.
Dan, Steve Borsch.
Hi,
how you doing? You're on with Tim Elliott, Phil Wilson, and of course, Graham Thickens.
Hi, Great. Dan.
Hi.
So you guys just got together, right? You guys just met on Thursday?
Yes. Dan and I just met the other morning. We had originally met, I think, back at Minibar, right, Dan?
Yep.
And when was that? May? I'm trying to remember
what it was.
Yeah. But I had previously met his co-founder, Matt Hardy, probably a year or so ago. And I kind of knew they were working on something. But tell us about what KidBlog is, Dan, and how you came to team up with Matt.
Yeah. KidBlog.org is a site that Matt started in 2007. He's a third grade teacher at Eden Prairie Public Schools. and was trying to find a platform to use for his students to create their own blogs while still having control from the teacher. And so that the teacher could regulate what comments are being put in there and what posts are being put up there. And couldn't find a good thing, so he customized a WordPress install and started tweaking it, improving it, and stuff like that.
And it's interesting that this is no normal third grade teacher we're talking about here. Matt, previously, before he got his education, his master's in education, was a computer science undergrad from U of M Morris, oh, right? Wow. That's where you guys went to school together?
Yep. We're both computer science graduates at Morris.
So and Matt decided after college that he really wanted to teach, and so he went back to school at locally here, right? At
the U of M. Yep.
U of M, and got his education, master's, and so tell us about how you came to promote the blog, or how it started taking off. And I should preface that by saying these guys now have this thing being used by 20,000 classrooms across the U.S. and Canada.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So we have 20,000 classrooms right now. And actually it does extend around the world. We have people in Taiwan and Japan and Europe and England and everything. So
How did it start? What made it catch fire in the early days?
I think there was a couple of key features that we added that really helped teachers keep an eye. You know, it's partly the control, but also the flexibility that, you know, they didn't have requirements. Other platforms, you needed to have student emails, and a third grader isn't going to have an email address that they can sign up with.
Let's hope not.
It was too full featured for a professional blogger. It really needed to be simple so that a third grader could navigate it and see and comment on other students' posts and stuff like that. The main kick came, we slowly kind of like didn't really publicize it much, but you know, some Twitter activity and people were finding it because they're searching and trying to find the right platform. Matt did a couple presentations for Minnesota Tech EdTech conferences and at like the MEA convention every fall. And then a blogger picked it up out of like Delaware, who's followed a lot in the ed tech space. And once he got a hold of it, it really kind of took off and started doubling every couple of months with the number of classrooms and users being added.
And was that kind of at the beginning of this year when that started happening?
So if you looking at our number of classrooms, if you plot it out over time, it was at about 300 at January 1st, 2010. And we're at 20,000.
Wow.
Today. So it's really taken off, and we've gotten a lot more active in seeing that it's kind of people are seeing it getting out there. And so we're actively getting out on Twitter and through our blog, sharing other people's stories, getting people to connect to other blogs so that they can comment on each other's posts and stuff like that.
So Dan, tell me a little bit about what makes this different than a standard WordPress blog. I mean, we talk about, because I think this is a marvelous idea. One of those things that I've been trying to push, you know, my kids, teachers for the past 2 or 3 years here in Lakeville to adopt some sort of a social media or new media or online communication, at least subject or chapter or section in their classes. But obviously a lot of attention paid to security on this.
Yep. There's no advertising. The teachers can control how much is public and how much is private. So they can have a completely private blog with no one can see comments or posts except for the people that can log in as students. And teachers can also create accounts for parents if they want to be involved as well. So
one of the things that I will do, I want to put in the show notes a link to the screenshots of the WordPress backend that you guys have created for KidBlog,
which is nice and stripped down.
You guys have really done a great job with this because A, it's extremely simple and really laid out well. B, it's very, looking here, and it says post approval. It's a checkbox. Teacher must approve posts before they appear, rather than, teacher moderation queue.
Yeah.
it's little stuff like that.
There's a lot of things like that make life a lot simpler.
Yeah, exactly.
And we're dealing with a wide range. At first it was a lot of people that were very tech savvy. And now, as it becomes more popular, we really need to make sure that the big part of the bell curve, the large number of teachers that are maybe aren't as technology savvy, that they feel that they're comfortable knowing how easy it is to add users and how easy it is to moderate posts and to share posts and things like that. There's a lot of effort going into finding the simplest way to present.
As you talk to these teachers, Dan, that are using KidBlog, what are they saying relating to you that kids are learning from the experience of writing their own blog?
I think the students are really feeling that they're just having so much fun and sharing and being online. Like they know that they're reaching with technology, and they feel that they're able to communicate so much more and want to comment so much more. They love looking at each other's posts. They love commenting on each other's posts. So much before of their writing would just be seen by their teacher. Get a little check mark, a little smiley face, good job, Johnny, and hand it back to him. And it didn't really feel like much. It didn't feel like you were sharing, really. Now that they're able to post on, if they're, talking about a book or something like that, they're able to share why I like this character and then have 15 comments from their classmates about like, oh yeah, I really like that guy too. And sharing their little piece, and they have this conversation about their writing rather than just, I brought it to my teacher and then maybe I brought it home and that was it. And they're having so much fun sharing all of this together. And some teachers even gone as far as through Twitter and stuff like that, like getting other teachers to comment on their students' posts. They love it when they do open some public parts of this, so that they can just see people from everywhere commenting on their writing. So I think it's really encouraging their writing skills, which is cool.
Now, are you doing anything along the lines of for WordPress, there are plugins like Smart YouTube, which allows somebody to literally just paste in a URL from YouTube and put a V or a VH for high def after the HTTP.
That VH is for high def. I thought that was for Van Halen.
Dang. No. See, Phil, you got to go through the training. But it makes it extraordinarily simple for somebody to embed a video. Are you guys doing anything like that so you can bring in other media?
We do allow them to embed other video and other media, but we haven't used a plugin to do that yet.
Okay.
They've embedded the other code or whatever. Into the post. So
yep. So this is a multi-user setup. Yep. So yep. You're hosting the footprint, and then people can create their blogs off of it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it sounds kind of interesting. Because you just alluded to inserting code for embedding. Are kids walking away with the basic understanding of HTML and that sort of a thing now, you think?
Not at the lower levels.
Okay.
Sometimes with that, I think they're getting help with some of the teachers, and I know that they are uploading files and stuff like that.
Well, I think it's great. I mean, whether they actually understand, I mean, they see that it's not magic. They see that there's code behind what actually happens online. And I think that's educational in and of itself. I think it's great.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, when I wrote a blog for Scholastic, for Scholastic administrators, called Accelerating Change, I was pitching hard to you know, get classroom adoption. I didn't know about KidBlog at the time, doggone it. But otherwise I would have done
tell
a story.
Them now.
Well, I'm not involved yeah. with them anymore, but the point is that there's been this shift in K-12 on teaching media literacy. You know, media literacy teaching has always been about teaching kids how to critically think about the media that they're consuming and understanding incentives behind various sorts of media. And, mm-hmm. we've got to make kids aware that, you know, just because it's on a blog, it's not right. And, you know, but that media literacy teaching has really begun to shift pretty fast in that teaching kids how to be able to communicate online, mm-hmm. how to be able to justify and fact check their sources and link to their sources and put together, you know, a cogent argument and deliver it in a variety of ways with video or audio or a blog post. And this really fits into that in a very strong way.
Yeah. I think KidBlog, it's really amazing to see what kids are creating, through this. I think it's giving them a sense of, the public forum and responsibility in the public forum and sharing and writing and getting, I think those comments really help, students see the power of what they're writing as well before it'd always be such a private thing, it seems like.
And you're having them, each kid. So if you're in 20,000 classrooms, then that's $1 a classroom a month.
Yeah. Not officially yet, but you know, there's a lot of ideas that are around right now. We've really taken off this year. It was kind of interesting to see because the summer is always really slow to see what, was it a temporary thing? Was it, you know, was there any fad nature of this, but it's really taken off this year. There's a lot more activity happening with the talking with teachers and talking with principals and even some emails with tech coordinators at districts. And so we're getting to that point.
Is this a more than just a labor of love? Do you have a business plan put together since advertising isn't the way to go? Are you hoping to build a subscriber base or what is the plan there?
Yep. We're working on a few different ideas right now, with subscription, with, maybe some installation, some private servers and stuff like that. We're not officially there yet, but the focus is this being a business and figuring out a way to support all the activities.
Has there been a challenge, Dan, particularly since not one but two stories about you ran on Mashable? Have the servers been getting hit pretty hard here lately in the last month, or do you have
under control? We went through that. Yeah, we went through that problem at the beginning of the school year when we had 100,000 students slamming it all the first week of school. That really exposed a couple inefficiencies that we had put in. But now that we've got that figured out, it's actually running really, really well. Cool. The Mashable and TC Business Mag and other stuff really haven't caused much of a dent, or the, you know, an extra 1,000 classrooms in the last week. You know, you don't see a proportional jump, you know, it's handling it all really well.
Well, everybody's goal always is, you know, to build critical mass and then flesh out the business model, that has worked very well for many companies. Mm-hmm. Starting up, and if you have 20,000 classrooms, you've definitely built one heck of a critical mass.
Yeah. I think so.
And it's just amazing that it came out of, you know, Matt's personal daily experience that he couldn't find what he needed to do his job in his third grade class, and so he went out and built it. I think that's just fantastic.
It's the beauty of entrepreneurship, right? Scratch your own itch. And
It's the necessity, right? The mother of invention.
Yeah.
It's a great Minnesota story, you know, and somebody was asking me yesterday, you know, do we have like an education thing going here? There seems like there's a lot of education stuff that comes out of Minnesota. And this certainly is another one to add to that list of cool things. So,
yep.
When you have the school system in the country, that these kind of things tend to bubble up. So one question that I have is, are you planning to extend this platform to add things like grades and things that other services provide now? Or is it just going to be centered on just blogging?
Our primary focus is focusing on the blogging aspect. The competitors and the nature of other software that's in the education space, didn't seem like to take on those guys to do that. I think doing something really well is a good goal for now, especially. We really want to build our user base and get it to be, you know, the blogging platform of choice for those teachers and really starting getting we're really with the tech savvy teachers and making sure that the teachers that have been around a lot longer that haven't grown up with technology as much, that they're as comfortable building a blog, having their students go out there and letting them build their literacy skills through KidBlog. I think that's a good goal right now.
One other thing I was going to bring up here, you have kind of an entrepreneurial legacy in your family, at least your extended family, Dan. Tell us about your Uncle Bill.
My Uncle Bill, he started working with Control Data a long time ago and started the first company he started was called DigiKey.
They were a client of mine back in the 90s. I've met your Uncle Bill.
Yep. And then he started Zeta, that's now out in Eden Prairie. Yeah. 20 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And yeah. doing very and well, I hear, Zeta.
My old CEO, Jay Coughlin, is there running it.
Yep.
Well, that's great.
The Lawson Connection, which, by the way, is Dan's day job. Tell us what you do in your day job, Dan.
Yeah, I started off as out of college, actually moving with KPMG as an IT auditor, then to General Mills, and now I'm at Lawson Software. In their finance department as business controls, Sarbanes-Oxley guy in the IT space.
Fascinating. Oh, wow.
Well, yeah. KidBlog sounds exciting. Best of luck with that. I think it's one of those tools that many teachers need to take a look at. And you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe there's an opportunity for, I would love it if a Microsoft or an Apple would see something like this and fund it rather than have to charge teachers for it. Lord knows they spend a lot of time spending a lot of money on
their own money
that go to the side, but you never know. Yeah. You never know. I think it's, I think it's a tool that needs to be and needs to be out there. And I commend you. And just best of luck in trying to make that, you know, be something that teachers realize, hey, I really need to be involved in this. It's great.
Yeah.
Yep.
Great. Well, Dan, thanks for your time today.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, and say hi to Matt, and we'll catch up with you guys as you go along. It's going to be an exciting ride going forward, I got a feeling.
Yeah, it's been exciting so far, so hopefully it gets even better.
Great. Good stuff.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks, guys.
That's good. I think that's wonderful that somebody's out there doing that, because, you know, that was always my thought is, you know, this is just can get so geeky that it's kind of difficult to integrate it into the classroom. And, you know, the back end of KidBlog is really dead simple. So it's great.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I hope possibly we'll be able to go and see SharePoint server at the new Microsoft store at Mall of America.
Oh, there's God. The segue. Good job.
Oh, I'm just dying to get over and see that.
Yeah. All right.
When does I sent out an email yesterday. I'm sorry. I didn't recheck. When is that supposed to open?
Soon.
First part of November. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's not
a month.
Gift giving?
Well, they've got 8,600 square feet they're building there. So what it's going to be.
I mean, have you seen a Microsoft store before? What do they put in there? I mean, is it just everybody's different type of computer?
And, no,
I mean,
it's literally Xbox. A knockoff of the Apple store. But right. They will have a big Xbox area, which, of course, my son will be in, hanging
we'll be
out.
Camped in.
Yeah. But they've got hardware from their partner vendors. And there's actually some other shots of the interior of stores. I know I have a friend that went to the Phoenix or Scottsdale store, and he walked in and just went, oh my God, they literally must have taken photos of the Apple store and just knocked it off.
It works.
Yeah, it does work.
It's a good model.
Yeah, Burger King never did that to McDonald's.
We were at the mall the other day, and I saw this, and it is massive. This thing is going to be unbelievably large.
Yep.
And it's directly across from the Apple store, so it's right in their face. It'll be interesting to see what happens, but I'll bet you it's going to look like a ghost town compared to the Apple store.
You know,
I don't think so.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. People are going to go in there. Like, I'll go in there just to look at the Windows Phone 7 to see what that's all about. And if they have a tablet strategy. I won't buy anything.
You won't buy it.
No, that's true.
Will you buy it?
No.
I mean, I'm not saying that not everybody is going to go in and not buy stuff. I'm just saying you would. Yeah, you go in it because you're curious. You're not interested in buying Microsoft, are you?
Well, if it's good.
Yeah, I mean, it all depends. I mean, I got to be honest.
A new copy of Word or something, you know?
Well, I looked very seriously at what the Google TV is going to be, and it's not going to meet anywhere near what I want it to do, so I'm not interested. We have this Xbox upstairs. My son loves the thing, and he's all over it. And then he comes down and works on his Mac. So,
yeah, right.
I mean, it's...
Well, it is. I mean, it is the game console of choice.
Yeah. Well, but it's also become this streaming box, too. You can do just about everything you can do on Apple TV.
Sure.
In fact, you can. You can do your YouTube stuff. You can rent movies and stream audio. You can do Netflix, and Hulu's coming to it pretty soon. So the Xbox, even if you don't use it as a game machine, it's still a pretty good set-top box.
Right. Yeah, it costs more than $99, huh?
Yeah, they got to work on that.
Apple's still got that price point there, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, the Xbox is a
you
real.
Can do more. Yeah.
It's a real computer. It's not like
right,
this,
right. Yeah, you know. True. Yeah, yeah, but I wonder. Hey, Steve, I wonder if they'll have a wing in that Microsoft store for Adobe here soon. What do you think?
Oh man. Well, for those that don't know, there was an article that Steve Ballmer and his minions came down to Adobe, and they had a one-hour meeting. And they talked about, you know, how to go after Apple collectively. And then one of the options on the table was, what if Microsoft bought Adobe? And that could be pretty interesting.
Yeah, they said that he actually discussed that with the Adobe CEO.
Adobe stock has been flat for quite a while, and the quarterly decline they just had is not boding well for the current CEO. And Adobe stock jumped after the rumor got out that this meeting had happened, and that's not good for Adobe.
Well, the shareholders may be pushing for something like this. But the weird thing is, you know, what about Silverlight? I mean, Silverlight and Flash, you know, a very weird combination it would be.
Well, Silverlight would probably go away.
You think
It has some advantages, but, well, yeah, I mean, why not take everything Silverlight does, all the goodness of the security of delivering content, and apply it to Flash, and because it's already got a dominant market share. And just go that way as a runtime.
Well, that'll piss off Netflix.
Yeah. Well, it'll piss off Doug Olson.
Netflix completely runs on Silverlight.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Yeah, it'd be hard to take it away, but maybe from what you're saying, it's like the combination of Silverlight and Flash technology would help cure Flash of a lot of problems.
Yeah, although Microsoft's history with securing software is... all that good. There's that. But anyway, but it could, I mean, with respect to, you know, Apple stiff arming Flash, it could very well mean that Flash becomes even more dominant than it is now. That everybody else adopts it against Apple's direction. I mean, who knows? But you know what? We're living in a time, guys. I mean, it's amazing when you look at the amount of flux that exists right now in everything from publishing to television to, tablets versus laptops and desktops and all the things that are happening with wireless. I mean, it's really exciting when you stand back and look at it. Absolutely. Yep. I mean, it's literally every single day. I'll go through my RSS read, but then I also go to Tech Meme, and sometimes I think I should just hang out at Tech Meme because it's all the top hot stories, and the stuff that's coming out and the things that are happening that are strategic are just amazing.
Yep. So, Tech Meme fire hose.
Yeah.
You could sit on that thing all day and be entertained, you know? There's never a dull second.
Yep. Well, this is just an aside and anecdotal, but our customer base for our home furnishings trends information, we do these PDF ebooks and so forth. The customer base has historically been senior in terms of leadership, but also more senior in terms of age. So it's been, I think 42 plus was the last stat we did, which was almost a year ago now. And that demographic has shifted down and gotten younger and younger. And the interesting thing is that we had to develop a how to get your trend album onto iPad page to walk people through how to do it in iTunes. Because we had so many requests from people that said, all right, I bought the thing digitally and I want to download it and put it on my iPad. How do I do that? And it's not obvious. And so, and again, it's not like there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, but we had a couple dozen requests for how do we do that? And that's an interesting shift even for us. So I expect a lot happening in first and second quarter of next year when a lot of these new tablets ship and new form factors with smartphones and so on. It's going to get pretty interesting.
Yep. So you should have download to your Dropbox as one of your options, Steve.
You think so?
Yeah, because then it would go right to their Dropbox, and then you could open it with a number of tools on the iPad, right from Dropbox. That seems to be one of the kind of the default storage buckets for iPads and similar devices.
I love Dropbox. Absolutely. We bought the 50 gig, and we're thinking of upgrading to the 100.
I use it. I use it all the time. I have a reading folder and I just drag stuff in. And then if I've got a few minutes, I'll just hit Dropbox on my phone
and
pull up a PDF or whatever.
Yep.
And get a little reading in it, it's very handy that way. And if I had an iPad, I'm sure I would do the same kind of thing.
So. Well, I've even set it up with clients cause you get 2 gigs free. And so they can set it up on their end and I can drop videos in, you know, screencast how to videos and things of that nature directly in there, or then they can drop in graphics and all kinds of stuff. So it's you're right. It's very, very useful. And that's a good idea. That's a real good idea. Hey, what's coming up?
Let's see. We've got Technia Awards coming up in November, and you might want to check those out. Yep. I know that they were talking about that yesterday at the MHTA, so I thought I'd pass that along. November 3rd at the Convention Center.
And Graham, when's that Minnesota Venture Conference? Aren't you going to that?
Yeah, that's this coming Thursday. Okay. I'm going to be live blogging from that fine event. I don't know, what is it, about the 16th or 18th annual or something?
24th annual.
24th, oh my God, time flies. Now.
Yeah.
So yeah, October 14th. That will be, like I say, the blue suit crowd for sure. You know, all the VCs and lawyers and accountants. I'm toying with the idea of, do I drag out a suit coat? No, I'm not going to do that. I'm going tie-less and jacketless.
I think you should go like your avatar.
I may actually go in jeans. Screw these guys. You know?
Go commando. Go commando.
That's right. They're too stuffy.
Yeah, I just don't want to read about the fact that Graham Thickens from Minovate was cross-dressing and showed up wearing a sundress, which is a faux pas in the fall, by the way.
With a lei.
Yeah. And his floppy hat. Oh my God.
Yeah. So I'm going to be there and with some of the other local media folks that are,
yep,
that actually get press passes to that thing. So,
yep. And then our pals, Scott Libman and Dan Malin are doing an event on the 26th called Leveraging Social Media Marketing from Insight Through Optimization. And it's for executives. And first off, it's cool that they're doing this, and this is a good thing. You know, Alvenda will be there, Joseph Reuter with Curation Station, Matt Meets, the CEO of Reside, and some other folks presenting. But the reason that I really love this is the fact that, as Andrew Eklund pointed out with MEMA, we've got to get people with checkbooks and people that make decisions to get what is happening in a big way. And I think this is a perfect venue to do that.
Yep.
And
it's, they have quite a network of affiliates and interactive agencies that are part of Magna 360. And this, yep, is basically their network of folks coming together and saying how they either get it or they're getting on with it big time.
Yep.
Because, you know, it's where all the brands are going and talking. And, you know, I mean, it's another social media event.
Is this
Phil was alluding to earlier? You could go to one or two a day.
I'm just a little concerned, guys. That, you know, we talk about this going a little deeper and a little bit more education, but this is 90 minutes. And look at this. I mean, they've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 8 presentations in 90 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll be fast. Maybe they each get 5 minutes. I don't know.
I guess.
Or maybe there's panels.
You know, I don't know, 5 minutes to talk about effective uses of content on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, all at once.
It's breathless. It's a fire hose.
Each one does it in 140 characters or less.
Ah, that's what it is. Good for you.
There you go.
I only say that, and not to be judgmental about the site, but or the event, because I'm sure it'll be a great event. There's some wonderful people there. But my question is, if we're really talking about more education, is another 90-minute session going to do it? Or do we need to get these people with checkbooks in rooms for a day and actually educate, not just, you know, throw stuff at them, but educate?
Maybe a half day. I don't think anybody will give you a day at that level. They just don't have that kind of time. Mm. So
yeah, it can be tough. I think this is mainly a marketing event, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's their business.
Yeah. Right.
They're marketers, you know? So you know, they're trying to snag people that want help, in social media apparently they came out to the MHTA thing, right, Phil?
And yeah, we had a good crowd. A couple hundred folks came out. That was nice.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah. And then I wouldn't doubt that they'll get, you know, 100 or more to this event, this Magnet 360 thing. It's free.
It is free.
Yep.
So yeah, it's interesting. I just, when I first read the Andrew Eklund piece, I kind of sort of poo-pooed on it, but now, you know, it's really brought a lot of things, to consider. And I think that, you know, commitment to actually learning this stuff needs to extend beyond a 90-minute session.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I had a CEO friend that was at your event that asked me some questions afterwards. He didn't quite understand some things, and
yep,
you know, but I get the feeling that you know, they're coming out because, you know, they're hearing all this buzz, what's going on and with social media, and so they're you know, there's no end to the desire to learn more, I guess, and particularly in the C-level folks. You know,
I think my biggest disappointment in yesterday's event was, you know, my intent was to really spend a little bit of time actually talking about tools, and actually because we do talk about it on this high level sort of overview, again, 90 minute session sort of a thing. And my desire yesterday was to move down the path of let's talk about tools, but actually, you know, my job is to moderate the panel, and the panel really definitely wanted to move down the more, you know, overview of the situation, the more of, you know, being social and whether you're prepared to be social as an organization and that sort of a thing. So, I am a big fan of events that say, okay, get out your laptops. We're going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And I think that's the kind of learning that needs to happen on a more regular basis.
Yeah.
I know Toby Grins did it at MEMA with WordPress. I know he tried to do it at the blog conference as well, but I think he quickly learned it was easy to get into the buzzy words and just assuming that all these people know this. I mean, when somebody mentions the word a Yammer or a Wiki, mm-hmm. Why are we assuming that everybody knows what Yammer is or what a Wiki is?
Right. So, yeah. The more about the tools. Michael Roventeen did a session at MEMA too on how to use the various Twitter tools. Which was I still wish I'd have made it to that one, but he put out I think he put out his presentation online, so you can go see it.
Michael, he's a giver.
He is. Michael's the man, you know? What a guy.
Well, our buddy, former Minnesotan who moved his company to San Diego,
Ferguson,
you don't mean Aaron.
Yeah, Folkeson? Aaron Folkeson from
MindTouch.
Sorry, Aaron. Not that he listens to the podcast, but at any rate, I got an email today that Wick.is, which was their hosted model for their Wiki software.
Is it the Libyans again? Did the Libyans get in there? What?
No, the Libyan, but it's got to be Al Qaeda. That's the only thing I can think of. But anyway, so that was kind of interesting. But you know what? We got to scoot, and I wanted to end with something. And the end is Sunday is 10-10-10.
Oh,
it's October 10th of 2010. And at 10 minutes and 10 seconds after the hour of 10 o'clock, I'm going to give $10 to my favorite charity. And we'll put a link in the show notes. I think it's fun. I think it's a fun thing to do. And
well, I thought about it, and I thought it would be just a lot of, we talk about giving and that sort of a thing. And I thought that, 10-10 of 10, let's use it to remind ourselves to give $10 to, a charity cause of your choosing. I'm not,
right.
I just think it's one of those things that I think. And of course, if you're listening to this podcast on Monday, don't you feel guilty for not yesterday?
But it's not too late. You can still
it's
get in on the
too
action.
Late.
Absolutely.
No particular cause in mind. Just go ahead and pop out.
I just want to tell people that my favorite charity, you can send your contributions to my PayPal account at graham@theckens.com.
Yeah.
Well, actually, there was at one point I was thinking, okay, there's 5.5 million people in Minnesota. If everyone sent me $1,
That's all
young.
About you.
That is all about
you. I got a post from a friend on the Facebook page that says, hey, where does it all end? Next year it's going to be $11 on the 11th and then 12 on the 12th. Yeah, right. I said, well, that's pretty much where it's going to end is 12 on the 12th.
That's right.
Well, then you could popularize 24-hour time here in the U.S.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea.
That'll
catch on. That'll
keep
it
going.
Nobody. Just keep it going.
You can keep it going until 2024.
There you go.
Well, I appreciate it. Yeah, I just thought it might be an interesting idea.
So. Yeah, absolutely. All right, gentlemen. As always, have a great weekend.
Thanks so much for being on.
And we will talk to you soon.
You betcha. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Good week.
My baby make me think I've been around long. My baby make me think I've been around too long. Because everything I do, tried not to love her, but the feeling is strong. I tried not to love her, but the feeling is strong. Everything I do, everything I do turn out wrong. Can't quit, though my love.